history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, brought to you by Paul Everett's RV Country, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are heroes around you. They're not going to call themselves that, instead reminding us of so many who made the ultimate sacrifice. But we can call them heroes after we take the time to examine what they were willing to do for our country. The idea is to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice, to preserve their stories so we don't forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along the way, we learn a whole lot. We're educated, we're entertained. So often we end up inspired by these stories from people who know they might not have too much time left here on Earth. 99% of the veterans we hear from on Hometown Heroes served in World War II. Every once in a while, there's an exception to that rule, and that's the case this week as we prepare to mark Independence Day and the 240th birthday of the United States on July the 4th. We're going to hear from a decorated Vietnam veteran today who also knows his time is running short. I started interviewing World War II vets in 2005 because they were leaving us at such a stark rate. All these years later, the reality is that our Korean War vets and Vietnam vets are dwindling too. And while those conflicts had different dynamics than World War II, the people in uniform were no less heroic. And over the years on Hometown Heroes, you've heard many a World War II veteran share his frustration at the way that Vietnam veterans were treated when they came home. Some of those World War II vets have fought back tears as they remember their sons who never got to come home, whose names ended up among the more than 58,000 inscribed in black granite in our nation's capital. Today, our Vietnam veterans are leaving us too quickly and too early. So many of them, because of the effects of Agent Orange, the infamous defoliant that has changed the lives of millions of Vietnamese people as well. The man we're going to spend the hour with today is also battling cancer that he traces back to his time in Vietnam. Not from Agent Orange, but from a moment that was supposed to save his life, and instead, barring some kind of medical miracle, will end up shortening it. A listener named John in Bakersfield, California, told me I needed to catch up with Jack Craig, a decorated vet who was in the headlines there recently because he and his wife Carol donated funding for not one, but two police canines for the Bakersfield Police Department. Listen closely and you'll become aware that the Craigs are fond of felines too. And in between the occasional meows, you'll hear a man who returned from Vietnam bearing wounds both visible and invisible. And a story that may give you some insight into some of the things the veterans in your life may have left unspoken. We have the privilege of celebrating our country's 240th birthday because generation after generation of courageous Americans have put their lives on the line to preserve our ideals. So enough from me. Let's talk to someone who has done just that. Jack Craig of Bakersfield, California.
I imagine as you're growing up around Enid, Oklahoma, the World War II and Korean War veterans were your parents, your uncles, your friends, dads, and everybody around town, huh?
Yes.
Did you hear much about the military growing up?
No, actually not. I got a half-brother. He now lives in Texas. He was in Korea. And no one else in the family had anything to do with the military except my older brother. Well, I have an older brother that went to the National Guard. I virtually went in the military in the dark. It's not like I wanted to go to Vietnam or anything like that. And I didn't want to go to war, but it's what my government told me to do. So that's what I had to do.
I know that's almost 40 years.
Yeah.
Actually, that's almost 50 years now.
Yeah, it is.
Hey, get your math straight. Yeah, that's almost 50 years when you decided to go then. And you're drafted, but you didn't want to wait to find out what was going to happen there. You said, I want to go right now. What possessed you to do that?
I've always had to wait for everything in my life. And I've worked since I was 8, 9 years old with my dad at a carpentry. I just decided that I didn't want to wait for someone else to decide what was going to happen to my life.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, that's the way most of my brothers and my dad were, is they just didn't like waiting for other people. My dad's favorite saying was every time he think I was doing something slow, he'd say, "Come on, got a dollar waiting on a dime." So, okay. I didn't volunteer to be an infantryman, but because I scored high in general intelligence and things like that, and infantry was where they wanted me, and I wanted to say, I said, okay. Then I went to school, got my E5 stripe as an infantry sergeant, and then went to Vietnam.
How did you feel about that? I mean, you hear so many different takes on the situation, and as time went on, I mean, over the next few years, I'm sure you were going to hear a lot of things you didn't expect to hear, but at the time, what were you thinking as you prepared to head over to Vietnam?
I was thinking that, God, I hope I make it home and reach 30.
Hmm.
But I knew it was what my government wanted me to do, and so I did it. I did not really know a lot about Vietnam, because in Oklahoma, we didn't have the protesters like they did, like the Jane Fondas and all of them out here in California.
Right.
We didn't have that back there. Oklahoma is a lot like Bakersfield. It's a very, very, very patriotic place.
Well, isn't Bakersfield the Oklahoma of California?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I call it Western Oklahoma.
Absolutely. That's why there's so many Sooners fans around here.
Yeah. Almost everybody I have met in the last 10, 15 years has a relative or came from the Midwest.
Mm-hmm. A lot of folks came out during the Dust Bowl, but then there's the oil connections and all that too.
Yeah.
So you said, so you hadn't heard a lot of the furor, the uproar, the controversy about Vietnam. You just knew that's where a war was and that's where you're supposed to go.
Right. And I was ready, willing, and able.
Mm-hmm.
I used to carry a gun and go hunting 2-3 times a month.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I haven't picked up a gun, but I think one time since I've been home from Vietnam, other than when I was still in service.
Mm-hmm. What did you find when you got over there? What was your welcome to the war moment?
Well, my welcome to the war moment was getting off of an airplane and looking around and not seeing any buildings. You know, they were Quonset huts or big bunkers of sandbags.
Mm-hmm.
And living in sandbags. I got checked in and they settled it, and I got my gun and everything and all of my gear from the company to go to out to the field, and then they put me on a helicopter and took me out to the LZ, or the forward fire base is what we called them. It was just north of Duc Pho and south of Chu Lai. I got off the helicopter there and I looked around and I didn't see anybody dressed as army. You know, everybody was in t-shirts and shorts and pants and boots. And my welcome to the world was, Sergeant Craig, you know, you got to go do this. This is your unit, and this is your squad, and this is your area. Okay, well, this is what my job's going to be for a while. Then it was about 5-10 days later, we were on patrol, and set off a hand grenade into a bunker or a hole. We figured it was a spider hole for the Vietnamese, and it went off, and then we got a bigger explosion, and I caught a piece of shrapnel on my face, and I'm just bleeding out like a chuck stuck pig. And that was my real awakening to Vietnam, is that you never know whether you're going to get hit or not, and how it's going to hurt.
Mm-hmm.
I still have this whole side of my upper lip and this side of my nose is still numb. I can't shave because I'll cut myself completely in two right here because I can't feel it.
Mm. So you've had that mustache for a long time?
Yeah.
Because otherwise...
Otherwise, I couldn't make it. I shaved it off one time, I think. Right, Carol?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was it. I never shaved it up after I got wounded there because I had a bandage across here.
Yeah.
To cover up the hole where the metal went through to my chin. In fact, the metal is still right there. It shows up in my dental x-rays.
Still in your cheek all these years later.
I've got metal all over my body. I've got about 18 or 19 pieces of metal in my body from a hand grenade ambush.
That makes airports fun, huh?
No, they're all small and they're all buried deep in my skin and they don't say anything to me about them.
Good.
The only thing that's really visible as far as scars or anything like that is my shoulder where I got shot. I got a bullet across the shoulder.
Right. And I want to hear about all those individual incidents, but so you're giving us a picture early on, you're confronted with this reality that there's probably really nowhere safe out here.
There is no place
safe. Even when you don't know where the enemy is and you don't even expect the enemy to be there, he's probably there.
He's there. And you can hear him every night.
What do you hear?
Parties in the villages and all, because we go out and we bunker down in a dry rice paddy, but, you know, and we would go to the village during the day, sit in the shade, that kind of thing. But you could hear the whoop roars and the partying going on in the villages almost every night. In fact, we sent a unit out of about six guys. They were real good. I mean, they were good because they could actually sneak up next to the village while they were partying and take care of it. And they had about 20 missions and about 22 or 23 people dead.
Wow. Do you remember the first time you had to deal with losing somebody you knew over there?
Yeah. One of the guys in my company, one of the other platoons, we were going down and we were going to go up to this rise so that we could settle down for the night. And we got toward to the top and a guy stepped on a bomb. And he lost his leg, and of course he was dead when it was all said and done. And then I found out, you know, when I was over there, there was about 125, 130 people killed in my unit.
Out of how many?
Well, they rotated us in and out.
Right. But your full strength was?
Full strength was about 150. And we were always about 5 or 10 short. Out of those 120 some odd people, there were 9 people that were actually shot with a bullet in combat. The rest of them were all victims of booby traps and what they call in the military now IEDs.
Right, the improvised explosive devices.
Tripwires and hand grenades and stolen claymore mines.
Well, I'm just imagining being in your shoes. So if guys are dying all the time like this and you know all these booby traps are out there, I mean, how do you take a step? How do you go anywhere? How do you go out on one of these missions and even lead these squads?
You have to watch where you step.
Yeah?
You have to take it on yourself. And as a squad leader or a platoon sergeant, it was my responsibility to make sure that they made it. And so I always stayed near the front of the unit, even though as a platoon sergeant, I was supposed to be taking up the rear. But I took on that role at the front of the group because I didn't trust the second lieutenants that were coming out of West Point and OCS and stuff like that because they just didn't have the common sense to slow down. You know, it was, you know, so I always stayed near the front of the unit so that I could see what was coming. You know, I mean, that's just the way I was.
Right.
I've always been one of those that would, even in civilian life, you know, if I won't do it, I'm not going to ask anybody else to do it.
Well, I'm sure the guys that served with you respected that and appreciated it.
Yeah.
But you just said you were responsible for those guys getting back.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure there were times where not all of you did.
Yeah, and it hurt. It hurt a lot. The first ones that I lost actually in my unit because we were ambushed. It hurt something fierce, and it was all I could do to pick up, move on, and not bawl like a baby, 'cause that's how I felt.
Yeah.
You know, I went over there, I was 20 years old, but I was still a kid.
Yeah, and all the guys around you were kids.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
I found a guy, this little gung-ho sucker, He had been in the Marines, and he was in the Army now. And he was on his third trip to Vietnam. And I says, 3 times you've been over here? He says, yeah, the first time I was 14. I says, 14? He says, yeah, I lied when I joined the Marines. And God. And then found out that he had been over there in the Army, and they'd found out that he was only 16, and they kicked him out. And he was 17 and a half, I think. He finally got his parents to sign so that he could join the service. And he was in my unit. Man. And I couldn't believe he'd already been there 3 times. And I couldn't believe that he wanted to stay.
What do you think was driving that?
He didn't have a thought process in his head that anybody could kill him. And he made it all the way through his tour. Mm. And never got a scratch.
Wow. You did. You were there over there less than a year.
Uh-huh.
But Purple Heart has been awarded to you twice. The Bronze Star, a total of 4 times, including a V for Valor. Sounds like that was a pretty action-packed 11 months for you.
It was. From March until the middle of October was hell. But yet it was very simple hell. Because when I woke up, I saw sunlight. I says, okay, I made it. I made it another day. Thank you, Lord. Mm-hmm. And got up and went going. Kept going. And that was it. If you saw the sun or even rain, but you woke up every morning, you thanked your lucky stars and you thanked God for letting you live another day. People like me, I never believed in organized religion.
Yeah.
My grandfather was a Baptist preacher, but I never went to an organized church. But yet, in the time that I was in the service, I prayed every single day to get through another day, because I never knew what was going to happen.
Well, we're going to hear some of the things that happened after our first break. We'll find out just how close Jack Craig came to never making it home, never meeting his wife, becoming a father and grandfather, never having the chance to drive his treasured classic car with a patriotic paint job. That's got to be the perfect convertible to cruise around in on the 4th of July. Check it out yourself in the photos at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. And we'll be right back after this.
If you'd like to sell your low-mileage, well-maintained RV in excellent condition, bring it to Paul Everett's RV Country and they'll sell it for you. That's right. Consignments are welcome. Any type of motorhome, travel trailer, or fifth wheel. With 8 locations in 5 states, there's probably a Paul Everett's within driving distance of this radio station. Helping RVers get the most out of their RVs is another one of those things that make doing business with Paul such a unique pleasure. Paul Everett's RV Country in Fresno and Indio, California, Bullhead City, Arizona, Laughlin, Nevada, Coburg, Oregon, and 3 locations in Washington, Fife, Milton, and Mount Vernon. For the exact locations, go to the website. That address is rvcountry.com. That's rvcountry.com. Over 55 years of experience and 1 million RVers served. Paul Everett's RV Country, proud supporters of Hometown Heroes.
Proudly presented by Paul Everett's RV Country. This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and a different twist this Independence Day weekend. We'll get back to the World War II generation next week with a vet who was on Normandy's Omaha Beach on D-Day. Today, we're getting the perspective of 66-year-old Army veteran Jack Craig of Bakersfield, California. He spent 11 months in Vietnam with the 23rd Infantry Division. What was the most difficult part of being over there?
The hardest part about being over there is never having a bed to lay down in, and never having an air mattress that would hold air, and sleeping on the ground for 11 months.
Yeah.
Or 10 months.
If you could sleep.
If you were allowed to sleep. Nobody ever got more than 2, maybe 3 hours of sleep at a time, because it would be their rotation to stand guard.
Mm-hmm. You told us before the break about your first Purple Heart when an explosion sent shrapnel into your face. You even said you can't shave because the right side of your face has been numb ever since. And I guess if it had been an inch or two off, maybe you might have lost an eye, maybe worse.
Yeah, or if it had been over here, it'd have gone through my sinus cavity and probably into my brain.
Yeah, and we wouldn't be talking right now.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, and you were wounded again, another Purple Heart in October that month, but I'm sure, of that year, I should say, I'm sure in between, from March to October, you got 7 months there. I bet there were some close calls during that time period.
Oh, yeah.
Any that stand out?
What always stood out to me was the forced helicopter rides and being dropped in the middle of everybody shooting at us.
How often did that happen?
About once a month. We'd have to go in and try to bail out another unit or something like that. And as we'd come in, it would be a hot LZ, and there'd be gunfire all over the place. And that was the scary part. But once the helicopters lifted off, and you realize that you're in the middle of this, and you got no place to go but to run or fight, that was even more scary because you didn't really know who you were fighting yet.
Right, or where they were or what they had.
Uh-huh.
Flying blind.
Yes.
Yikes.
And the other bad part about, I'll sound like I belong on a soapbox, but the reason, you know, we never lost a battle in Vietnam. The United States military never lost a battle. They say we lost the war, but the military didn't. The politicians gave it away because we always came out ahead in the battles. That's my soapbox. I dislike people getting involved in a war or telling people that are in a war or in harm's way from some thousand miles away what they can and can't do. They're over there to survive, and they're over there to protect themselves and their buddies, and just leave us alone and let us do our job, and we'll be home pretty soon because there won't be anything left over here to fight.
I mentioned the Bronze Star's been awarded to you on four separate occasions there. I noticed one of those citations had a date on it for a specific incident, and it was actually the day before you were wounded for the second time.
Mm-hmm.
What's the story there?
It was one of those urgent, out of the clear blue sky, getting a helicopter trips. The other company in our battalion, and they were sending us in to try to recover any of the wounded or to help them fight their way out. Well, I got wounded. But things settled down. My company went in, and we went through the village, and we found no one alive. The entire company was dead.
Wow.
And I'm sitting on the outside of the village, you know, with a hole in my shoulder. And that was, there was two of us. There were two awards given that day. One was a Silver Star, and one was a Bronze Star. There were two Silver Stars put in for. But because he was in front of me, and he helped me get out, even though we opened up the village from where we were so that they could get in and check it out, they lowered my Silver Star to a Bronze with a V, and he got the Silver Star. Which is, I think it's great. He deserved it. You have, in the sequence of military, you have the Congressional Medal of Honor. Then you have the Silver Star. Then you have the Bronze Star. So I came within two stripes of a Congressional Medal of Honor. Okay. I think I did pretty good.
You're not complaining. Mm. You're here.
Yep. Most Congressional Medal of Honor winners aren't here.
Exactly. That, and a lot of times that's part of the commendation itself. But the reason they recognized you and they gave you the Bronze Star with the V for Valor was that you guys risked your lives to go in there to try to save that other company.
Yes. And unfortunately, when we landed, it was a hot LZ, and we crawled our way through the weeds, hunched down, going real slow, checking it out, and trying to get inside the village to open up this area of the village so that they could get in and spread out from the inside out. And unfortunately, being at the front, like the dummy I always was, but I always led. I never followed when I was in the military. I always led. That's when I got shot in the shoulder. I heard something out of the clear blue sky. I heard something move, and I turned to look, and the bullet grazed my shoulder this way.
Mm-hmm.
If I hadn't turned, it probably would have went in here and out the other side.
And who knows what it would have hit in between.
Well, I doubt if I'd be here. Because it would have gone through one lung into my heart. And if it was, depends on what caliber of weapon it was, it may have gone all the way through.
So it hit you in your left shoulder, but if you hadn't have turned, it would have come right through your chest.
Yes.
And what was it that made you turn and look?
I just heard something. It was like a sense. I heard something over here, and I wanted to turn and see what it was. You know, it's when you're in a situation like that, your emotions and your senses are so spiked up high. You are amped to no end.
Right.
You know, it's like somebody that had just pounded down four or five monster drinks. You know, I mean, you were just literally that extreme.
The adrenaline was pumping.
Mm-hmm.
But you're hit. You've got a wounded shoulder.
And then I hit the floor, and I turned, and I saw the little pop his head up out of a spider hole.
Yeah.
And he threw a grenade at me. And that's what got shrapnel all over my back and my neck and head and everything.
How did it not kill you?
He was a bad shot, bad target. He couldn't throw very well.
Good thing.
But I could throw. Mm. And I plopped a grenade right down in the box in the hole with him and watched it go up. Mm. And never cared whether he lived or died.
Well, at that point, it sounds like it was you or him.
Well, it was.
Yeah.
And that was the way all of the guys in the field, all of the guys that were actually in that war in combat, that's how we all felt. It's either him or me.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, and then, you know, after we get home and 4 or 5 years later, I had a hell of a time with the why him, not me.
The survivor's guilt?
Yeah. I had a hell of a time. I mean, to the point that I was crushed. I lost a lot of good people over there, whether they were with me or just guys I knew.
Yeah.
If from training and all of this stuff. I lost a very, very good friend from Sand Springs, Oklahoma. And, I mean, he was good. He was a good man.
What was his name?
His name was Randy Phillips, and he's buried in Sand Springs, Oklahoma.
What happened to him?
I don't know. All it says was deceased. Him and I used to write back and forth to each other,
mm-hmm.
and I'd send him a letter and tell him how it was, what I was doing. He'd send me a letter telling me what he was doing. He was in the 101st Airborne up north of Da Nang, and I was down in Chu Lai, Duk Pho, about 100 miles south of Da Nang. But I had a hell of a time with him because he was a football jock, wanted to go to college, but he got drafted because he didn't take enough classes.
Mm.
But he decided it was time for him to go to service. So he went, and he went in the service. He was engaged to be married when he got home.
Mm.
I went by and saw his grave once. I missed him. And it took me a long time, and unfortunately, way too much alcohol, to get to the realization that it's not my fault that he didn't make it.
Wow.
You know, it took me a lot to accept that.
Yeah.
And you'll find that happens with a lot of the guys. A lot of the guys that have PTSD...
yeah,
like I do, we came to that conclusion, and instead of either coming to that conclusion or you perpetuated that guilt by drinking or fighting with your family.
I don't want to press my finger into that wound, and you're being very candid about the emotional scars. You
yes.
have some physical scars. You've got metal all over your body still from the enemy there in Vietnam, but the emotional scars. And in thinking about your friend Randy over all these years, have you ever found yourself thinking, what would that guy be doing today? What kind of life would he have right now?
Yes. In fact, I know what he'd be doing right now.
What's that?
He would either be one thing, his family owned a business, so he would have been in the family business. But I think if he wasn't in the family business, he would probably be running the town of Sand Springs, Oklahoma, because he was that popular a guy.
Yeah.
You know, either that or he'd be chief of police or something.
Well, and I want to come back to your injuries and what happened to you, but that probably is a good point to ask you about the wall, because one of the reasons the Vietnam War Memorial is so powerful is the mm-hmm. names. I mean, we take World War II veterans to Washington, D.C., and they go look at the World War II Memorial and the Korean War Memorial, and they're both moving in their own ways. But these World War II guys break down and are more emotional at the Vietnam Wall than anywhere else, and it's because of those names.
It's because most of them have a child or a relative that's on that Vietnam Wall.
Very common.
Because we followed their steps.
Yeah. Have you been there to the wall?
I have signed up to go to Honor Flight. I've been to the wall twice. Not the real wall, but
the traveling wall. What do you think it's going to be like to go see that one in Washington, D.C. and go find Randy's name on there? And probably 100 other names.
Yeah. It's going to be very emotional because there's a lot of guys' names that are on that wall that I remember. But at the same time, I'm also looking very much forward to watching other people's reactions to it, especially people that never were in the war.
Mm.
You know, that's the part that... The part that makes me the most excited right now is the fact that we, as Vietnam veterans, are not referred to as just murderers and baby killers anymore. We are considered veterans.
Amen.
And we were just like everybody else, World War II, whatever, Korea, all of them.
Yep.
We've just done what our country wanted us to do to help protect it and our freedoms and our lifestyle.
And 58,000 of you died doing it, and you came really close to adding to that number.
Yes, I did.
And we still need to finish that story about Jack's second Purple Heart. We're going to do that when we come back and also find out why this very patriotic veteran dreaded the 4th of July for many years. Find some photos of Jack Craig and of all the other veterans who appear on this show at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. And we'll come right back after this.
Remember when the bank gave you free checking and savings accounts, even making money for you when you kept your dollars there? Paul Leffler here to say I've recaptured those days, and you can too with EECU. It's not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that just keeps growing and growing. The newest branch is in Tulare, and nearly 250,000 EECU members represent 10 different California counties. As little as $250 in a savings account earns you dividends. And access is so easy. 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And I haven't even told you what I love most about EECU, the credit union's support of causes up and down our area, like Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 500 World War II veterans have gotten to see their memorial in Washington, D.C. for free because of the leadership and financial support of EECU. Ready to join the team yet? Call 1-800-538-3328. Paul Everett's RV Country has 8 locations in 5 western states, including Fresno and Indio, California, Bullhead City, Arizona, Laughlin, Nevada, Coburg, Oregon, right off the I-5, and 3 locations in Washington, Fife, Milton, and Mount Vernon. Over 55 years of experience serving the needs of RVers across the country and proud supporters of Hometown Heroes. Find a location near you by visiting rvcountry.com.
Honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Loeffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere on the air and online by Paul Everett's RV Country, with 8 locations in 5 western states.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, and a different angle today with a veteran not from the World War II generation like usual, but this time a decorated veteran who served in Vietnam. Jack Craig of Bakersfield, California was honored 4 times with the Bronze Star and was wounded twice in Vietnam.
So this second time when you're shot in the shoulder, if you hadn't have turned, it probably would have killed you. But still, you're shot in the shoulder, then the grenade, you got shrapnel all over your back. How do you get out of there?
I laid down. I stayed there for a while, probably about 2 or 3 minutes, and that's when the other guy that was the point man recognized that I was down, and he recognized, there was a break in the shooting, and he grabbed a hold of me and just him and I ran to the, back far enough away to where we could get down behind a berm.
Could you feel all that pain?
My adrenaline was so high, I didn't feel a damn thing.
Wow. But eventually you probably did.
Oh, I did. I did about an hour and a half later. I was hurting pretty bad. That's when the medic came and gave me the shot of morphine with his dirty needle.
And in your understanding, it was that dirty needle that left you with
hepatitis.
What we call now hepatitis C.
Mm-hmm.
And that was probably the origins of the liver cancer that you're battling now.
Yes.
Does that make you angry?
No, because I know that the Army kicked him out and put him in Leavenworth Prison.
Really?
The medic, yeah.
Wow.
Because I was not the only one that he did it to. He would take the morphine and he would take it out of the vial and shoot himself up. And then he would fill the vial with water and use that on us.
Oh, man. What about your recovery? What was that like? How long did that take?
About 50 years.
Still working on it, you're saying?
Yeah, I go to a group counseling every Wednesday for PTSD. Mm. And I've calmed down an awful lot because I know that I have the cancer and there isn't anything I can do with it. They can't treat me because my blood levels are all screwed up. And they say it's unsafe to do any procedures because of my blood levels. And so I'm taking my oncologist's word for it that it's going to be, he says it's a very slow, they're slow growing tumors. So I'm expecting another 3 to 4 years, okay? I want to see 70, and I want to see my granddaughter graduate from high school. After that, I just want to be there for her.
And her is your wife of 38 years, Carol?
Yes. Yeah. We've been actually together 40.
Yeah?
I met her at Fort Ord. She was painting her car in a body shop, and I was taking a class at the body shop to learn how to fix cars, because I could tear a car apart mechanically, but I never could really make it look pretty.
Uh-huh.
So I wanted to learn how to paint.
Yeah.
She wanted to change the color of her Lotus.
Uh-huh.
From green to orange, because orange was her race car's color.
And that's been a shared interest of yours ever since. You guys have some classic cars. You go to display at car shows.
Mm-hmm.
What's your number one of all time?
My number one car?
Yeah.
I'll take my 67 Camaro. Uh-huh. Convertible. It's always been kind of a dream car of mine. I wanted a Corvette back in 64, but I couldn't afford such a thing. That was way too expensive a car back then. And I know I can't afford one now because I don't have $150,000 to throw at a car. But I saw that Camaro, 67 red RS convertible V8 automatic with the hidden headlights. That was one of the cars I remember seeing in 1967 when I graduated from high school.
Yeah.
That was one of the cars that I remember seeing and liking a lot because it was the poor man's Corvette.
And I don't want to put words in your mouth or see something that isn't there, but it almost sounds like you're saying that car takes you back in time to before everything you went through in Vietnam and how that changed your life.
Oh, yeah, it does. I go out there and I'll sit and I can go out there and just stare at it. Carol likes it. She drove it around town for quite a while before I started tearing it apart and redoing it. But I've tore it apart and redone it. Yeah, it's up about 350.
Is that all?
Horsepower.
Vroom, vroom.
It's a 4-speed automatic transmission with a beefed up torque converter for drag racing. It's got a QA1 racing suspension all the way around.
Sounds like you should take it out to Famoso and put the pedal to the floor.
I won't do that because I do not want to tear it up.
Yeah, which would be unavoidable at that point. One thing I want to ask you, and thank you for being so candid about all of this, because I think it helps a lot of people understand. And there are a lot of guys out there like you who maybe experienced similar things, who felt similar things, who felt that nobody wanted to hear it and they haven't talked about it. So you talking about it is really powerful and really meaningful for a lot of them. And thank you for serving our country. Thank you for going through what you did on our behalf. What is the number one thing that you think people today, because a lot of folks listening right now, they weren't even alive when this was going on. What do you think they need to know about you and all those other guys who were over there, like you said, following orders and doing what your government asked of you?
They need to recognize that it is part of being American and living in this free world. People like me and the other guys that went over there, the ones that came home, the ones that died, we were doing this to preserve our freedoms that we have. And the thing that I want all of these people to understand as I'm talking to them, or as they're hearing me, is that respect each other. Don't, this gangs and drugs, all that does is destroy the person, and it destroys society in general. And they need to stop and go back. And the one thing they need to learn, the same thing that we did from our parents and our grandparents, that you treat everybody as you want to be treated by them. And if you want to be bullied, then bully someone. Or if you want to kill someone, stand in front of them and hand them the gun. You know, it's something that people have to do to maintain their sanity. And people like myself, we all learned, because we were forced to, grow up fast,
yeah,
grow up responsibly, and do better things for other people.
And that's why you and your wife, among other things, have sponsored a couple of police canines for the Bakersfield Police Department. I know there are a lot of different things that you've been involved in.
Well, 13, 14 years in car shows.
Yeah.
Hosting and running registration and stuff like that. So
let me ask you this, because I'm sure you spend some time thinking about your legacy when you face a diagnosis like the one you have, and the future, and that time clock, which is always uncertain for all of us, maybe seems a little more certain to you. What are you most proud of when you think about the time that you spent in the Army and the fact that you went over there and did what you did with other guys doing the same thing? What are you most proud of?
That I survived and I found my beautiful, wonderful wife. And she has been a godsend to put up with me for the 40 years that we've been together. Because she's the most important part of my world right now. And that's the main reason I'm living.
Couldn't say that any better. I guess the last question I have, I'm thinking Veterans Day obviously is a special day for you. Mm-hmm. I'm sure Memorial Day, when you think about those names on the wall that you're going to go see. But what does Independence Day mean to you? When July 4th rolls around every year, as a Vietnam veteran, a wounded Vietnam veteran, and decorated Vietnam veteran, what does the 4th of July mean to you?
It's a day that America declared its freedoms, independence of being oppressed by other countries. And it's also, it's a day to salute this country. And quite honestly, the first 10 years I have from when I got home from Vietnam, I hated 4th of July. Because all the firecrackers, they scared the hell out of me.
Yeah, I bet.
And I would hit the floor.
I believe
I'd be
it.
Walking down the street and somebody would shoot off a firecracker and I'd fall on the sidewalk. Yeah. But it's important. It's a celebration of our freedoms. It's not just a day to set off fireworks. It's a celebration of our freedoms that we have earned and that we are able to pass along to our children and grandchildren. It's like I have a daughter who went in the service but couldn't complete it because of medical reasons. And I have a granddaughter that's 16, and she is absolutely beautiful. And my daughter is a computer technician, does exactly the same job I did for 32 years with IBM.
Yeah.
She does the same thing for Toshiba.
Huh.
In fact, she was hired to go to work for Toshiba by IBM. And she sat at my desk and gave me hell because I left too much trash on my desk.
That's funny.
But Independence Day to me is a day to share my freedoms with my family.
Well said. Was there anything else I didn't ask you about that you wanted to get in there?
No, I said it all. Like I say, I am not anywhere and would not be anywhere if it hadn't been for her.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the fact that I made it through Vietnam and I made it through the service is a miracle because I was one hell of a screw-up. But she straightened me out, and we've been together 40 years, and I swear to God, that's what I'm going to miss when I die.
After hearing Jack's transparent tale today, I hope you'll join me in praying he gets more than those 3 or 4 years his oncologist projects, more opportunities to share his story with others, and more time to enjoy family and the fruit of his labor with police canines. I mentioned he and Carol have covered the costs for 2 dogs for the Bakersfield Police Department, and they're excited because Bakersfield is hosting the canine trials on July 8th and 9th. They'll be at Rabobank Arena with police dogs and their trainers from all over the state of California competing. If that's something that's up your alley, make your way to Bakersfield and keep an eye out for Jack. Maybe you'll have the chance to shake his hand and thank him yourself for his service to our country. We're out of time on Hometown Heroes for today. Hope you have a wonderful 4th of July. I'm Paul Leffler, encouraging you to remember on Independence Day and every day that freedom is not free. If you spent much time listening to Hometown Heroes, you've probably heard veterans from all over America talking about the mission of the Honor Flight Network, taking World War II veterans free of charge to see their memorial in Washington, D.C.
I wanted to see it. I've always wanted to see it since they built it. And to see all those guys there that did survive, and then they get emotional. Pretty soon you get emotional too.
I tell you, that Honor Flight, I just can't believe what a wonderful deal it is.
Everywhere people came up to us, military guys and civilians, and wanted to shake our hands and thank us for all we did. I kept saying there were 16 million of us, you know, and I only did a little piece. But it was just an emotional high.
When it comes to our men and women in uniform, all gave some, and some gave all. A reality underscored as veterans visit the World War II, Korea, and Vietnam memorials and Arlington National Cemetery.
All those white crosses, they're going to your heart. You just know that there's good guys there, but they had to die. For what? So you could live.
And while they are still living, Honor Flight gives the rest of us a chance to express our gratitude. Won't you encourage the World War II veterans in your life to put in applications for this all-expenses-paid journey to their memorial?
It does something for each of us who have been veterans who go back, whether we're a guardian or whether we're honored as a guest on the flight. It completes our life, really. Gives us a sense of fulfillment that we weren't able to have before, I think.
If you live near me in Central California, find Central Valley Honor Flight at cvhonorflight.org. Wherever you're listening, there's a hub in your area, and you can find it on the national website, honorflight.org. Sign up a veteran, volunteer to help, or donate to this important and time-sensitive mission. It's amazing what it means to these members of our greatest generation.
I'm telling you, they make you feel so good and so wonderful. Let me tell you, I can't preach enough about this. You listening?
The manner in which we were treated and greeted and acted toward was just awesome. It made me believe that the people of the United States are just wonderful.
Time is of the essence. Team up with Honor Flight today and help give our veterans one more tour with honor.